Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Awakening Shakti, The Transformative Power of the Goddesses of Yoga, by Sally Kempton, narrated by Leslie Howard. Publisher's note: this audiobook includes bonus material. Please visit tantor.com and type Awakening Shakti into the search box. Follow the link to the books page. Then, under the supplemental content section, please enter the access code TEACHER and then click the unlock button to access the bonus material. The code should be entered in all lowercase letters. All figures, appendices, and reader's guide referenced in this audiobook can be found in the bonus material. Chapter 1. A Crown of Feminine Design. The Goddess Incarnates. I am the Sovereign Queen, the treasury of all treasures, whose breathing forth gives birth to all the worlds and yet extends beyond them. So vast am I in greatness. Devi Sukta, Praise Hymn of the Goddess from the Rig Veda. If there is to be a future, it will wear a crown of feminine design.
Aurobindo Ghosh.
One October night in rural India, I fell in love with a goddess. It happened on the second night of a festival called Navaratri, which celebrates the divine feminine as the warrior Durga, slayer of the demons of ego and greed.
Like so many festivals in India, Navaratri is both a big party and an occasion for mystical communion with the divine.
Women put on their most gorgeous clothes. Temples overflow with worshippers. Nights are filled with dancing and storytelling. People have heightened, even visionary, experiences of the energy that the festival invokes. That night, several hundred of us had gathered amid a blaze of candles next to a huge statue of Durga, 18 feet high in her red sari, seated on top of a white tiger, arms bristling with weapons. I was supposed to tell one of my favorite mythological tales, the story of the romance of the goddess Sati. I was thrilled by the opportunity to tell a story, something I love to do, in such a heightened atmosphere. But when I stood up to speak, I was seized by a feeling much bigger than excitement. It was a kind of ecstasy, a deep, pulsing joy that nearly undid me while I tried to form the words of my tale. Later, I would learn to recognize this feeling as one of the characteristic signatures of the goddess's presence. The divine feminine has 1,000 names and 1,000 moods, but when she chooses to show up for you, she very often shows up as ecstasy. Ecstasy is a feeling that is hard to convey and impossible to ignore. Every few minutes, I had to stop talking because tears kept threatening to break through my voice. When it was over, I knew that something had just happened which would change my life. It wasn't just the story that did it, but I'll tell you the story anyway. Back at the dawn of time, the great goddess who creates the world and then lives as the world is asked to incarnate as Sati, she who is, in order to make the sacred marriage with her eternal consort, Shiva. Without her presence, Shiva cannot act in the world. He sits on a mountain, lost in meditation, disdaining to perform his cosmic function. This creates havoc in the cosmos, so the great deities Brahma, the creator, and Vishnu, the sustainer, approach the goddess on their knees. They beg her, for the sake of the world, to take the form of a woman and lure Shiva out of his yogic trance. Daksha, a minor elemental deity, will be her father. The goddess agrees, but only on one condition. She has seen that men and gods have begun to treat women as property, lesser creatures in the cosmic hierarchy. "If I agree to become your daughter," she tells Daksha, You must promise to honor me as the great goddess. If you do not, I shall instantly leave my body, for I will know that the time is not yet right for me to act fully in the world. Daksha humbly agrees, and Sati is born in his household. At the age of 16, she marries Shiva, drawing him out of meditation through the allure of her irresistible beauty and her power of creating bliss. Shiva is the primal outsider of the Hindu pantheon, the lord of thieves as well as yogis. The original shaman as well as the primal yogi. He resides in the deep forests and mountains, attended by ghosts and goblins. He refuses to change his homeless lifestyle just because he has a wife. So for eons, Shiva and Sati make passionate erotic love under trees and beside streams, in subtle realms beyond the clouds, and in secret mountain caves. They adore each other with cosmic passion. Then the trouble starts. A few thousand millennia have passed. Daksha has worked his way into a position of power as the leading deity of religious orthodoxy. In the process, he has forgotten his promise to the goddess and forgotten his daughter's real nature. He disapproves of Shiva's rebel status and feels personally threatened by Shiva's obvious disdain for convention. Daksha plans a huge cosmic fire ritual, which will establish for all time the religious structures of the universe. He invites every god, titan, celestial musician, snake deity, and nymph in the universe. But in a fit of celestial malice, Daksha deliberately sends no invitation to his daughter or her consort. Sati hears the news on the day of the sacrifice. She's stunned beyond measure. Daksha has done the unthinkable. Not only has he grievously insulted her beloved, he has dishonored the world mother, the power of life itself, without whom religion is meaningless. Sati knows she cannot remain in a world that does not recognize her. She sits in meditation, summons her inner yogic fire, and sends her life force into the ether, leaving her body behind. Shiva goes mad when he finds her. He takes himself to the ritual ground and destroys the sacrifice. He then takes Sati's body in his arms and begins to careen through the worlds. Wherever he carries her body, earthquakes and volcanoes, tidal waves and forest fires erupt. At last, the gods do the only thing they can do to save the universe. They send the great wanderer, Saturn, to cut Sati's body into pieces. As the parts of her body fall to earth, they become physical pockets of sacred ecstasy, earth shrines. For eons, in hidden caves and beside trees, near bodies of water and at the heart of villages, people will find the goddess enshrined in the soil and rock itself. Her body is the sacrifice that infuses the divine feminine into the earth. The story, as I told it, comes from the Shakta tradition, the branch of Hinduism that worships the goddess as the ultimate reality. In the more traditional version, Shiva is the main figure in the story, and Sati is depicted as a submissive Indian wife who leaps into the sacrificial fire because her husband has been insulted. In fact, this version has a dark side. It became a model for Hindu widows, who are often encouraged to immolate themselves on their husband's funeral pyre in imitation of Sati. The Shakta version reveals a far more interesting take on the story. As the great goddess herself, Sati has the power to choose life or to depart it. She doesn't leave her body because her husband is insulted. She leaves because, like so many fathers and the conventional world he represents, Daksha has failed to honor her power and independence. He embodies patriarchy's inability to see the primal divinity of the feminine. She leaves because she knows that if the dignity...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?